Whoa, this is so cool. Just look at how many stars are out.
We need to get out of the city more often. I know we're always talking about things that we should do, that we never get around to, but seriously, sometimes I just need to get away from the whole college party scene and chill.
Isn't that what we usually do when we go to college and party? Chill?
You know what I mean. Sometimes it's just kind of nice to get away and get into something kind of deep.
Oh, yeah. Remember what we were talking about last time?
Oh, yeah. There was this hippie guy that was in our econ class who was so excited to take us up here and get us blazed. And then he had just taken an astronomy class, and so he was completely stoked on how many stars there were.
And he had the connects for the best herb ever.
Oh, man, that was back in the day when Steve still knew how to have a good time before he turned into a total geriatric.
Come on, man. That was like 2 months ago. You guys talk about it as if it were ancient history.
And that was probably the last time you even smoked.
Sorry if I think that we should be able to get into deep stuff and all the time. We sure aren't getting into anything too deep in school. And I don't think that I should need to smoke in order to think about something profound.
Yeah, but last time you did smoke, you were totally getting all deep. Remember? You were lying on top of the car, and you were like, we don't even really matter. Just imagine. Just imagine how big the galaxy is. Remember? You were like, just imagine that. How do you find yourself in the universe? It's like looking for yourself on a sesame seed.
Oh yeah, the sesame seed. That should have taught all of us a lesson that watching the Discovery Channel while under the influence of the recreational drug marijuana can be hazardous to your mental health. Remember how freaked out we were when we got up here all because of that show? Because it had William Shatner or some cheesy guy. And, you know, he was talking about all this stuff about, you know, all this sand in his hand. And it was like as if a grain of sand was the sun. Then all the sand on the earth would be equal to all the stars in the universe.
Whoa, that's fucked up. Wait a minute. You better shut up or we're going to go through it all over again.
I wouldn't even mind. I kind of like to think about the whole cosmos thing. But it's just so inapprehensible, totally unknowable.
It's times like these that I always say, just look at it. And enjoy it. Just look at it and enjoy it. It's simple, so just be simple, man.
I don't really think that's necessarily the case. I'm starting to think that we could know it. I went to another one of those political meetings.
Oh God, not another one. Steve, you are going to turn into one of those freaks.
Hold on, I'm getting lost here. What does politics have to do with the stars? No, better yet, what does politics have to do with my buzz?
You and your buzzes.
Buzz.
Go ahead. Look, guys, I'm telling you, you would not be so skeptical if you had already been there. I don't know yet whether or not I agree with everything, but I know that people have to start thinking about the kind of stuff that they talk about. Because I know that we never would have gotten so messed up from thinking about space if we had seen what they were talking about. They were saying that our very existence is actually pivoted on the knowability of the universe.
Huh?
Yeah. They started with the Egyptians.
Nebuta Muri Iwahi Woodwahara Hawete Mutir. One minute.
There's our friend recounting once again the old tale of creation. I can hear him, in fact, he is now speaking of that black void known as Nun, the vast and endless ocean of darkness from which a great shining egg spun forth, the sun, known to mortals as Almighty Ra. Apparently, it was from the receding black flood waters that the various gods and goddesses would emerge. Ha! Hear how he describes the canopy of stars above us as the goddess Nut, whose arms and feet stretch from one horizon to another, whose starry body bending over us is held up by Shu, the god of air, standing upon Geb, the god of earth. From that point on, though, he loses me with all this talk of the battles of Osiris and the journey of Isis. What this has to do with a procession of lions and fish beats me. Yet, he always manages to connect these stories to the heavens above. Wait, he's finally stopped. Look how motionless he stands. How intensely he has fixed his gaze.
It's getting late, Sudamese. What on earth are you staring at?
That plateau over there.
Near the suburb of Giza?
Yes. Solid bedrock rising several hundred feet above the western bank of the Nile.
What of it?
It's a perfect location for observing the heavens. It has a flat, level horizon, which allows one to see almost everything found in the nighttime sky.
Still, what of it? What good is there in missing a good night's sleep to look up at the same old...
To improve your soul, Heru, and to elevate your mind above the limits of your sight, in order to grasp the unseen principles which generate all that is laid before your eyes. Besides, it was taking the time to look up that's produced all the strength and riches of our great civilization, and the backbone of our economy, for which we have everything to be thankful.
I see you've been spending too much time with that cult of Imhotep. He was just a scribe, you know. Okay, maybe the world's best architect, but you've let all his philosophical writings go to your head. There's no relationship between economy and the stars.
In these two kingdoms of Egypt, from what is all our wealth produced?
The Nile, of course.
That's right. It's irregular floodwaters that allow our skilled farmers to plant and harvest such a rich crop every year.
And how do you know when to plant for the best harvest?
I know this one. Just count a certain number of full moons till the next flood. 12 moons, I believe. Just about one every month.
Oh, no. Now you're into this as well?
Great idea, Maat. But I think if you pay close attention, you'll find your method only works for 1 year or two.
How so?
It's about 12 months, but the phases of the moon don't quite match up perfectly with the seasons. It falls a little short from coming back to the same position at the same time each year.
Wait, where are you getting this from? The sky appears to me just a random splattering of stars across a dark backdrop.
Okay. What's the shape of the backdrop under which these stars are splattered?
I'd never thought about the shape of the sky before.
Who cares about the shape?
Well, take a look. How does it appear to you?
How can I begin to describe what I'm seeing, Sudamese?
Okay. Let's try an experiment, Maat. Using one eye, and with your finger, point to a star.
Which one?
The first one that catches your eye. Hold your finger right there. Okay. Now pick another star, and with your hand still outstretched, and with a single gliding motion, point to that new star.
How does pointing at something tell me anything about it?
Wait, it was what we did between pointing at the two stars.
Moving our finger in a circular way around us.
Creating an arc, that's right. Wow, the more I think about it, the more everything around me takes shape. Whichever direction I point towards, I find myself moving about the inside of what appears to be a great...
sphere. What the priest astronomers call the celestial sphere. And now, dear friend, you've been initiated into the secrets of observational astronomy, known to the wisest since ancient times, and with which all our knowledge of the heavens has been produced. It's by tracking the positions of stars, both moving and fixed, and the relationship between them severally, across the inside surface of this celestial sphere, that we have discovered the tools of mathematics, tracked the seasons with which to plant our crops, and mastered the calendar around which our society runs.
Please describe the celestial sphere a little more.
Well, let us then anchor ourselves in this great sphere. Now, point to the spot straight up, and directly overhead, right above your head there. This imaginary point is commonly referred to as the zenith. Now imagine another point directly underfoot, extending out into the universe below the Earth, as if the Earth was transparent. Okay, this point is known as the nadir. Now between these two points, trace out a great circle, exactly halfway.
The horizon, Sudamese! It traces out the horizon!
Wonderful, Maat. Your mind has now divided the infinite whole of visible universe in half. These two equal divisions of our great sphere has given us a geometry around which to navigate our voyage of discovery. Let us now sail to the northernmost point on our heavenly ocean. Following the two stars of that chariot, follow that arc over to the North Star. That's true north. Okay, now using that point, now let us create more equal divisions of the sphere with our mind by tracing out another great circle, starting from that northern star and arcing across to the zenith directly above us. So with your finger, take that line and draw that line, that arc across there. That's the celestial meridian. It's crucial for describing changing position of stars. We can now describe and locate all night sky phenomenon within this newly created geometry. And so you begin to see, Heru, that what to your initial frustration seemed nothing more than the complete randomness of stars spired about is in fact highly ordered in the most divine and beautiful of fashion. In fact, the sun and moon and even the planets, which everyone would expect to fly all over the place, follow roughly the same arc across the sky. We call it the ecliptic, on which the zodiac lies. And interestingly enough, the 12 constellations, or signs of the zodiac, that lie equidistant from each other on its path, appear to march across the sky on an annual basis, giving us a reliable reading of the season we're in.
And that's how you know for certain when to plant for the best crops around the Nile, huh?
Almost, but not quite, Maat. Actually, it is the perfectly synchronized movement of another constellation, not of the zodiac, though, that signals with precision the beginning of the flood season. It is Sirius, the dog star, that pokes its head above the eastern horizon at the beginning of early dawn just before the sun rises, which tells us the flooding of the Nile's life-giving waters. Her flood waters are so important to the strength of our great kingdom that the rising of the dog star marks the beginning of our civil calendar every year.
And your point is...
Ignore him, Sudamese. He's caught up in the dog days of summer.
Quite literally.
But this is profound. Tell me, are you implying that there is indeed regular cycles of motion to everything in the heavens above?
Almost. And though the daily motions are subsumed by seasonal motions, which in fact are observed to repeat with some regularity over the years, there is discrepancy. For instance, I recently visited the great temple and scientific complex around Saqqara, built by the great astronomer-architect Imhotep himself 72 years ago. To my surprise, all the various markings used to track various cycles, such as the rising and setting of key stars, and yearly phenomenon, such as the equinoxes and solstices, were off by exactly 1 degree.
I'm not quite sure what that means.
Well, I doubt the great Imhotep could make such a simple mistake as that. Which leads me to believe that the whole image of the sky, with its cycles and all, is in fact moving within a greater cycle, which to complete one rotation at a rate of 1 degree every 72 hours... would take at least...
72 years? 25,920 years to come back around, given 360 degrees in a circle.
Remarkable, huh? In fact, this precession is most noticeable when observing the rising of the sun in a particular constellation of the zodiac at dawn on the vernal equinox of each year. That is to say, the day in spring in which night and day share an equal number of hours together. In fact, many of the markers honoring the phenomenon now taking place in the constellation of Taurus are beginning to appear more suited for the constellation of Aries instead. These constellations act as sort of flagships, heralding in a new age and season. In fact, imagine this. Over the course of the next 4,000 years, the position of the equinoxes will proceed from one sign of the zodiac to another in like manner, remaining a little while longer in our age, in the period of Taurus, and then continuing into Aries, shifting for a time into Pisces, and eventually one day, looking east at dawn, we'll find ourselves in the age of Aquarius.
Isn't it strange, given how short our lives are, to even conceive of something 26,000 years into the future?
Of course, it's only a working hypothesis. Certain proof of it requires greater experimentation. Fortunately, I have plans for a massive workstation, modeled off the design of the Great Step Pyramid of Imhotep built under the reign of Zoser. Amazingly, the exact latitude at which we find ourselves here at Giza permit the perfect witnessing of the conjunctions which mark the beginning of various ages in this heavenly procession. Such a viewing station would have to be higher than any known structure ever built by the hands of men, and be perfectly aligned to that celestial meridian, which we mentioned before, to give us an accurate measuring of the cardinal directions.
I figured, look, I respect your passion for these ideas, but as charming as they are, I doubt you will ever see them take shape anytime soon.
Of course, Heru. Such a great project will require at least a generation to complete. But once completed, think of the advances in science and technology that could be made. Think of the impact on our society. A renewed outlook for our great nation, and because of it, the pride of all the known world shall it be.
The question is how such a thing is feasible.
What authority has the capability of mobilizing on a national scale for this ambitious project?
That stubborn ass, the great pharaoh.
Pseudemies! Such name-calling against the very living God incarnate of these two kingdoms of Egypt.
But is it true?
Yes. But have you no shame?
Shame for saying that which is true?
Regardless.
If the Lord Khufu is as you say he is, how then shall you move the pharaoh to such noble action?
As you would any stubborn ass. Appeal to his sense of immortality.
By Zeus, Father, this most astonishing view of the blazonry embedded on that heavenly canopy overwhelms my soul with such a sense of wonder and beauty that it nearly approaches a painful threshold.
True, my son. It is a most enthralling sight that has been crafted to circumscribe our vision's domain. But to advance toward manhood is to grasp the hands by which have stitched this most wondrous tapestry, which envelops us by twilight and warms our souls after dark. You see, our midnight dome has been crafted by the most skillful hands in the entirety of the cosmos. The nighttime stars are not mere burnished jewels so embedded as on any tapestry you have ever seen, but rather these illuminations are ablaze, and they're in motions congruent with divine justice itself.
They do seem to me to be ablaze, but Father, I don't believe that I have ever seen them move.
And see them move, you never shall. Not with your eyes, at least. And this, then, is my objective for you as concerns perfecting yourself into adulthood. That you must begin to become able to hold these images firm in the wax tablet inscribed in your soul. Then a comparison of those mental afterimages with new images that you impress onto that waxen tablet will allow your mind to see the motion that your eyes cannot. We men have not been given the eyesight that reaches into the night, as has the cat, nor the wings to fly unbounded, as has the eagle, nor the longevity to live many generations, as has the cricket. But if you take course to see that which is unseen, you shall soar to a level of immortality envied even by the gods themselves. And that, and only that, is what makes us human. Suitably spoke Socrates on this subject. For the soul which has never seen the truth can never pass into human form. For a human being must understand a general conception formed by collecting into a unity, by means of reason, the many perceptions of the senses. And this is a recollection of those things which our soul once beheld, when it journeyed with God, and lifting its vision above the things which we now say exist, rose up into real being.
So it wasn't really the case, as they say, that Prometheus ran out of gifts of abilities and talents on all the other creatures, leaving humankind with nothing else but fire?
now you are starting to perceive the true meaning of our origin. For it is true that we were not given any physical prowess, as that had already been doled out to all the animals. But Prometheus knew that none of these creatures had bodies that could house the spirit that could govern the world around. So crafty Prometheus had the foresight to know that the seed of heaven lay sleeping in the earth. He scooped up some clay, moistened it with water from a river, and kneaded it this way and that, and shaped it into the image of the gods. In order that we may have life, the core of many animals was locked in our breasts. But our true nature came only after Athena marveled at it all and breathed into us the spirit, the divine breath, which made us completely alive. Even so, we aimlessly moved about. We saw, yet we did not see. We heard, yet we did not hear. We wandered as figures in a dream, until Prometheus stole for us the sacred prize of Olympus, fire. Then, when we sheltered ourselves from the elements with our gift of fire, our eyes started to follow the smoke up into the night sky. So did our souls float upward following after, for then Prometheus taught us about the rising and the setting of the stars, discovering for us the art of counting in true number, and communicated to us the music of poetry.
But what about the barbarians that never look up? What do they have to live for?
Do you know of the demigod Asclepius?
Assuredly, he was raised by the centaur Chiron, and became the greatest master of the art of medicine. Socrates spoke of his importance even in his dying words.
But did you know that he also goes by another name? A name from his native land?
What name is that?
He is the great Egyptian city-builder, physician, and the father of the great pyramids, Imhotep. You see, my boy, while it is true that we are most favored and fortunate to be Greeks, do not think that all the barbarians have always been as they are now. We are not the first group of people to study the spherics of the heavens, and we won't be the last either. For whenever men wish to advance the cause of humanity, they first need to attempt to contemplate the eternal. And that humbling act, as we were just humbled now, produces all the curiosities which investigate into the real nature of all the physical things. Indeed, astronomers know that there are Vedic peoples who have stories of the heavens that are older than time itself. And our own ancestors from Egypt succeeded in unfathomable deeds, without which we would not even exist. And furthermore, no civilization could ever have survived without this kind of understanding.
That sounds beautiful, but I cannot help but think that I can think of one that would not. What about a simple group of farmers who would have only needed to know how to plant a seed and how to water it?
And also where to plant it in so far as best?
Certainly.
Then I take it they would also need to know when to plant it insofar as is best.
I suppose they would.
And suppose they needed to plant a certain seed in a certain place, right at the beginning of the season called spring. How would they know when to do the planting?
It wouldn't take an astronomer to count the phases of the moon. Just find the right time to plant. Then wait for the cycles of the moon, and you would be back at the beginning of spring.
Except that what actually determines our season is not the cycles of the moon, but a different set of relations, which we think has to do with where we are in relation to an orbit that the Earth takes around the sun. There is a battle raging on right now as we speak over whether it is our Earth going around the sun, or, as Aristotle says, the sun going around our Earth.
Why do they not all agree?
It's not so easy. It requires a proof of somewhat higher causes. It may take many generations to prove. Here's why. Take your finger and orbit it around your eye with your other eye closed.
It looks like my finger is circling my eye.
Right. Now, orbit your eye around your finger.
It looks the same. My finger still appears to be orbiting my eye.
From the point of view of the observer, there is no difference in the perceived motion. From a relatively stationary body observing a body in motion, or the inverse, from a moving body observing a relatively stationary one.
If it is so difficult to figure out is exactly going on, then how can it be of such fundamental importance?
Perhaps you have heard the story of how Thales was able to achieve a fundamental peace treaty between warring states by outflanking the heads of state with his ability to forecast an eclipse based on his knowledge of the true motions. But much more fundamental is how these ideas have been used by sea travelers.
How is that?
Before man conceived of a ship, we had no way to explore the planet and discover what else there was, including the discovery and the colonization of the Greek islands by ancient seafaring cultures. With ships, the pilot's art was then given birth, the essence of which lies in more than just how to steer a ship.
But isn't that the essence of the pilot's art? How to steer the ship in so far as is best?
And by best, would you mean any way that would get you somewhere? Or the most direct way to get where you intend to go?
The latter, of course.
Then, as one final exercise, I would like you to imagine yourself in the middle of the ocean. What do you see when you look around?
I see water, every way that I look.
So if you want to go to some small island directly east of you, which way do you steer?
Well, I know where the North Star is, so I just keep going this direction to my right when I face the North Star.
And if you go slightly northeast or slightly southeast, how would you know?
Well, I don't know.
Or if you went a lot northeast or a lot southeast, you'll probably miss the island that you are aiming for.
I suppose then that you are going to tell me that there is something more to the astronomy of the pilot's art than simply knowing where to find the North Star.
First off, there are problems in trying to map out the stars from the celestial sphere onto a flat plane of papyrus. These mappings explode on the edges of the map, where they start to lose all accuracy the closer you get to the edge of the map. But Platon rediscovered the lost method of mapping the sphere onto the plane, with his now famous regular divisions of the sphere.
I would like to know more about that.
Well, then you should try to figure them out for yourself, on your own, and maybe they will accept you into the school of Athens.
Regular solids, huh? But that still doesn't explain how pilots can go east or west without missing their targets.
If the pilot goes too far north or too far south, what do you think happens to the North Star? If you watch it from here every night, it will appear to stay in the same place, wobbling a bit with the rest of the stars circling around it. However, if we traveled south to Alexandria, it would drop a bit in the sky.
How can that be?
Well, imagine that the Earth were a sphere, and that the North Star was very, very far away. What would happen as you went toward the top of the sphere?
What do you mean by top? I thought you said sphere.
Well, a rotating sphere, always spinning.
Then by top, I guess you would mean one of those two poles that correlates with where the sphere meets the axis of rotation.
Exactly. Now, if that axis of rotation lines up with some relatively fixed star in the sky, then...
The North Star!
And where it would it be if you stood on the pole and wanted to look at the North Star?
It would be directly overhead, at the zenith point in the sky.
Then where would it be if you stood at the halfway point, between the poles, on the surface of the sphere?
I suppose it would be straight out at the horizon.
And if you walked a little more than halfway up from the middle, say 50 degrees up toward the pole, where would it be in the sky then?
I think I would need to draw it out in the dirt.
Nonsense. You are a Greek. You need to be able to do geometry in your head. Just think about it, you'll get it.
Okay, I will, but do you think that I am ready to learn about something that I heard some of the older shepherds talking about, called the retrogradations of the wandering planets?
Are you familiar with the Pythagorean student of Archytas by the name of Eudoxus?
Indeed. He is the mathematician from Cnidos, who attends all of Platon's lectures at the School of Athens.
Well, you do seem to be familiar with him. But one thing you may not know is that he is now studying astronomy in Egypt with the priests of Hierapolis. And just before he left, he had discussions on this very subject with one of the oldest herdsmen I know.
And you were present when these dialogues took place?
Not exactly. But I do from time to time run into that old herdsman, and he has been more than happy to repeat for me the discussions in their entirety.
Could you?
Could I what?
Could you repeat those conversations that I may be enlightened?
I could and would. As long as I can remember them, that is. For as of this very moment, I am not entirely certain that I will be able to fully recall them.
Well, by Zeus, I hope you can remember.
For your sake, my son, and mine too, I hope I can as well.
There we go.
On this instrument, a small quadrant of gilt brass, where the word, otherwise the empty space, I had an artist paint a beautiful young man, wreathed by laurel branch, sitting on a square stone near a tree, which on one side is green and leafy. He is depicted as holding in one hand a celestial globe, and in the other a book, all the while stretching his feet out upon the green grass and herbs that cover the root of the tree.
Yes, it looks very expensive.
I must admit, Johannes Kepler, that over the past few months you have done a most excellent job in assisting me to calculate my observation of the stars.
Lord Tycho Brahe, you were there as well.
When you submitted your book, Mysterium Cosmographicum, to me some time back, I believe it was 4 years ago, in 1596 or 97, I said to myself, what a mind on this young lad. But he needs the help and experience of a nobleman. I still can't believe that teacher of yours tried to hide you from me, my good friend, what's his name?
Michael. Michael Meslin.
When I was still doing observations in then, if you recall, on my pretty little island, which I called Uraniburg, where I had many more people on my staff.
Yes, I remember. Lord Christian IV, after the death of his father, Frederick II, sought to harm your comfort of place. The Lord Christian IV, who, unlike his father, held you in low esteem, took the gold that fed your mistress Uraniburg, and soon you had to close down, all because you refused to repair the Chapel of Magi at Rockloud.
That ungrateful child! All the things I did to that court, and he refused to recollect. Let him lose the best thing he ever had, me.
You do speak of yourself quite often.
Yes. Have I mentioned that because I'm an artist, I make instruments and map that which is logically perfect, the heavens? These works of art must reflect the flawless work of God and that which he ordained us to do, that is, simply admire and record.
And it is known widely throughout all of Europe that you excel above all men in these so-called art forms.
Therefore I am a god. He who is unable to live in society, or who has no need because he is sufficient for himself, must be god, like Aristotle said.
Or a beast. Like Aristotle said.
That's Aristotle's bad opinion.
Think about the root of these things. If one holds these instruments and then asks, what are their use? Then one may come to a better understanding of what prosperity is. We use them to further our knowledge of the world and the heavens in order to increase our children's well-being, do we not?
I don't understand. To better our children's well-being?
It's well known today that those awe-inspiring pyramids that stand at the shore of the Nile, built by peoples so long ago, however beautiful, are meaningless to a society out of harmony. And out of harmony, and by out of harmony, I signify the reckless disregard of human reason in seeking to further mankind. Mankind goes about the world seeking knowledge, and using that knowledge to better his surroundings, in order to live better and happier. If only we had a nation based on that today, That's to say, a nation whose sole benefit, or a nation whose purpose is to perpetuate the happiness of man's soul by allowing him to participate in a process of making discoveries and implementing them to benefit and the benefit of him, themselves. Their posterity. Today, war and disease are all over the nation, all over Europe. And that's all these nations seem to perpetuate.
Oh, Johannes, the young are easily deceived because they are quick to hope.
We make war so that we may live in peace.
Where's the peace? These religious wars have been around since before my birth. In war, truth is the first casualty, and our father's second.
Truth? We will never know truth.
So even you don't think that man can know the truth, and that truth sets men free?
Look, man will and can never know the truth. All man can do is sharpen his eyes so that he may better perceive that which is happening. But sadly, never why it is happening. Do not look too much into the underlying causes of things. Simply try to find a nice model that everyone can accept which fits the description of what you see. And if at some time it no longer works, don't worry. Just make the needed adjustments to your preferably already existing system.
But
as long as it fits your observations, it'll do just fine. Besides, you'll never really know what's going on, especially up there in the heavens.
Well, take for example the observed motion of the planet Mars, the god of war. See how he marches and dances subtly across the sky, relative to the fixed stars behind him, in the same eastward direction as the rest of the planets and our moon. Yet, every 2 years, he turns back westward, pausing for a brief moment before looping back eastward to resume his annual trek. He certainly is a troublesome god for not being able to stay in his perfectly circular orbit like this. This paradox leads me to question.
You and I can't solve that. All we can do is give an opinion on what's happening in the sky. That is to say, give a model that best represents what is happening.
So, an opinion on what is happening?
Yes, an opinion.
Even your beloved Hippocrates said there are in fact two things, science and opinion. The former begets knowledge, the latter ignorance. So then the question becomes, are we, but more specifically you, a scientist?
I should like to say so.
Should scientists avoid ignorance and seek to be wise?
To the best of their abilities.
Does a scientist search for the rational order in things?
Yes.
And would it be reasonable to call that rational order a sort of harmony?
Certainly.
Do then, after finding that order and harmony, do we communicate both of the former and the latter in the language we call mathematics?
Yes.
Then the chief aim of all investigations of the external world should be to discover the true rational order and harmony, which has been thoroughly composed by God, and which he has revealed to us in the language of mathematics.
Yes. Ptolemy's godlike system explained the sight to the best of his ability. Well known to both you and I, he proposed, that at the center of the universe, we obviously find the Earth, as is self-evident. Around us revolves everything. Closest is the Moon. And then the planets, Venus, Mercury, and next, of course, the Sun. Anyone with eyes can see that much. After which circle us the outer planets, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. And finally, a transparent backdrop of fixed stars, each one circling out in perfect circles, exquisitely beautiful, yet sadly out of date.
Copernicus, who I am most sympathetic towards, no more than 50 years ago, echoing back to Aristarchus, had determined what he had determined 2,000 years ago, spoke of something different. He, Copernicus, that is, hypothesized that the sun lay at the center of the solar system, and that Mercury, Venus, our very Earth, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn, in that specific order, spun around it in similar perfect circles.
Ah, and because my model is the perfect combination of both, my dear Johannes, it follows that my system is the best. I don't know how many times I must explain this to you before you get it, but I will keep trying. The moon, of course, revolves around us. The sun revolves around us with the rest of the so-called planets, which circle about the sun like moons. The whole planetary system is composed of perfect circles, while the Earth, because we here are furthest away from heaven, lay idle and unable to move.
I must object, Lord Tycho. All things idle turn like water stagnant.
Yes, we lowly creatures on Earth are stagnant and foul, which keeps us far below and ever distant from those things which are higher.
You know, Plato would argue otherwise.
Well, what of it? And what does Plato have to do with astronomy? He's just a philosopher.
Well, in the dialogue called The Republic, Socrates speaks of the people chained inside of a cave, entertaining themselves with shadows. That is to say, acting as if it was a science to master those shadows. These fettered men's folly was in fact that they had no idea what they were observing were merely shadows, until one day one of the men happened to escape. This man not only found that it was merely a candle generating these shadows, but also that outside of this cave there was a far more beautiful world. When he came back to free his friends, not only did they not believe him, but sought to kill him for defying what they were set in believing. They didn't get too far, because those beloved shadows, which they were chained to, didn't let them cause any harm to the enlightened man.
Are you calling me a shadow gazer?
Well, in a sense, we all are. As we sit here gazing at the stars, how would we know if we were looking at just another lifeless shadow?
Well, we wouldn't.
Unless we knew the ember we call the cause, which because of its quality is too hot to touch and too bright to look at directly.
I'm not clear.
Well, in another one of his dialogues, the Timaeus, he echoes back to Egypt by discussing the nature of the solids from which the pyramids themselves were built. Those solids, which come from the divisions of spheres cut by great circles, reveal some striking secrets. Those same solids on which my hypothesis of the solar system is based gave man more power in the universe. These ancients were able to discover in spherical geometry the order of things displayed in the stellar canopy with their mind, and prove through the physical construction of great astronomical structures that the world is lawful. This didn't happen because of the pyramid, but because of the mind that existed before the pyramid, which was able to grasp the knowledge of the universe and apply it to further his welfare and that of his posterity.
This is an interesting notion of posterity, but continue to elaborate on these matters of geometry.
Well, are there geometric principles that when employed are the same on Earth as well as throughout the universe?
How should I know that?
Should things in the universe be so inconsistent that Pythagorean theorem not work and yet be true in Athens?
No.
So it would work in Athens, as well as any other place?
I couldn't see why not.
What about the moon?
Inconceivable. Though it must be right.
So in understanding these principles, can we know something that is truthful about the universe?
Yes. That these geometric principles are truthful.
It seems so. When Aristophanes discovered that the earth was round, was that proof that we could know the nature of things?
It seems so.
Are there geometric relationships in the stars, however diverse?
Certainly.
Then the diversity of the phenomenon of nature is so great, and the treasures hidden in the heavens so rich, precisely in order that the human mind shall never lack in fresh nourishment, that nourishment being in truth.
Is that what you spoke when you wrote your book?
Yes. I began by trying to inscribe squares, hexagons, and other figures inside of a circle in order to find ratios involving the successive distances between the planets. When this failed, suddenly it struck me. What have plane figures to do with celestial orbits? I cried, inscribe the regular solids. To represent the Earth, I used the sphere as the norm and a measure of all. Rounded, I circumscribed a dodecahedron, a solid with 12 pentagonal sides, and put a sphere around for the orbit of Mars. Around that again, a tetrahedron, a solid defined by four equal triangular sides, the corners of which mark the sphere of the orbit of Jupiter. Round that sphere again, I placed a cube, and for that sphere, Saturn.
And for Venus and Mercury?
I inscribed in the sphere of the Earth's orbit an icosahedron, a figure that has 20 equal triangular sides. It is a sphere for Venus, and inside that sphere, I put an octahedron, 8 equal triangular sides, and its respective sphere.
And what did you find?
The nature of the universe, God's motive, and plan for creating it, God's source for the numbers, the law for such a great mass, the reason why this is, there are 6 orbits, the spaces which fall between the spheres, the cause of the great gap separating Jupiter and Mars. Though they are not in the first spheres, here Pythagoras reveals all this to you in 5 solids. Clearly, he has revealed by this example that we can be born again after 2,000 years of error.
That seemed really profound, but I've got to go. I've been holding it in for a while, and now I don't have enough time to go to the men's room because I'll be late for dinner with the illustrious Peter Vok Ursinus Rosenberg. Bye.
If you keep holding it in like that, one of these days you may hurt yourself.
Alright, y'all gotta be quiet for Massa come and find us out any minute.
So you said we's gonna escape here?
Well, I was talking to a carpenter who stayed at Massa's house, and he told me there's a railroad for us, but it's underground.
What's that mean?
Well, that means there's a way to get us out of here. These people up north who are trying to help us to our freedom.
That'll never happen, James.
Would you just listen?
Look there. You see that thing there? That looked like a sipping gourd.
What?
A gourd, like a squash with a button, but once made hollow for drinking.
That there looks like a chariot. It's just a swinging low and kissing the ground.
It's moving around the North Star, up there in a circle.
Well, all the stars move in that rotation.
They ain't moving now.
You gotta give it time. Look at that chariot. It's gonna move throughout the night.
Okay, yeah, I see it.
They all move around this North Star.
Before my mama left, she told me about that star. It leads to God.
Well, to get to freedom, we have to meet Reverend Daniel Wood's friend, Peg Leg Joe. We'll be up a ways, but we gotta get up there to meet him by following north.
How?
Well, first you gotta know when. Which is the best time, because we got longer in the night, and the rivers is frozen for us to cross.
How do we get there?
If you follow the drinking gourd up along the river, just keep going till you see the dead trees. Keep on that river and not another.
For how long?
Well, when you come up on the end of the river, wide 2 hills. Keep wide the drinking gourd, and you'll see a meeting of 2 rivers on the other side. That's where you'll meet Joe to take us up to the north to freedom.
Oh no! Here come Massa.
Swing low, sweet chariot. hell? What are y'all doing here? Just a singing? You slaves are dumber than I thought. You out here in the cold dark? Why aren't y'all inside the shed just drinking and screwing and having your fun like good slaves? Looking at the stars, eh? Well, I can tell you won't see nothing up there. I've seen the same shit for 30 years. Now get your asses inside before y'all get sick and can't work. Get!
All right, now, Master gonna hear the plan. Remember this. Follow the drinking goal.
Follow the drinking goal. Follow the drinking goal. For the old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking goal. When the sun comes back and the first quail calls, follow the drinking goal. For the old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking goal. Follow the drinking goal. Follow the drinking goal. For the old man is a-waiting for to carry you to freedom if you follow the drinking goal. The river bank makes a very good road. The dead trees will show you the way. Left foot, peg foot, traveling on just to follow the drinking goal. Follow
This is the dining and the Age of Aquarius. In the late 60s, the musical Hair gave the world an enduring vision of flower children.
Welcome back to NPR, where we play music to make ourselves feel better about the world. This is brought to you by our sponsor, Grandma Millie's Homemade Jam. In the latest breaking news, Tom Ridge has suspended the presidential elections until further notice due to terrorism. I repeat, terrorism. Attorney General John Ashcroft has raised the terrorist alert level to fuchsia. That's three shades above orange cream and two below turquoise. He advises consumers to stay home, but don't worry. If you need to buy something, it should be available on eBay. In other news, Dick Cheney has declared himself king and replaced the flag with the flying middle finger. Following the beheadings, President George W. Bush made a statement.
My fellow Americans, we mean to bring peace about the world. We have to bring freedom, because people should be free, free to choose Coke or Pepsi, free to choose the choice on whether to choose the freedom of choice or free choices.
Also, Martha Stewart's new book, Lick This Carpet, is on shelves tomorrow at all major retail stores, because they're owned by the same company. Join us again for a powwow session where we will be accepting callers on whether or not Dick Cheney should be king. And that's the latest from NPR.
Let's turn the music down for a minute. I'm trying to find Steve. I think he nodded off for a minute, and I'm afraid since he took his car up here, he just got sick of how buzzed we were getting and decided to try to catch the end of another one of those meetings. Everyone says that those meetings run really late on Saturdays.
I just hope we still have a future. You know, there's no jobs out there anymore.
The last thing I remember Steve talking about was some kind of dark age that we were in now. I don't know. Steve, are you out there? Somewhere? We're ready to talk politics.
Are you guys talking about astrology?
Not exactly.
That's great. You know, I was up here meditating on some healing crystals, and I could feel some youthful spirits. I was feeling your energy radiating, so I came to see if you were real or signs from Mokasta. Ooh. You have an interesting aura. What's your birth date?
June 13th.
Ah, Taurus. You are modest and often rather quite shy. You are a person who is content with being in the background or serving as an assistant in a supporting role rather than the lead. You are quite humble with your own assessment of yourself, and you have a very strong professionistic attitude, with a tendency to be overwhelming and self-critical. Often you will simply refuse to attempt something because you feel you cannot meet your own high standards.
Actually, my sign is Cancer.
That's what I said, right? I forgot.
She is creeping me out.
Hey, Myra, I just lost my job and my children need food and diapers and all I got is $20. Should I get an herbal body saran wrapping, or can you tell me my lucky lottery numbers?
Well, I've summoned my Mother Earth powers of Venus, and I can tell you that your sign is ruled by Mars, which rules the natural seventh house. When a planet or a house cup contains Libra, it'll show one where to strive for harmony, creativity, and balance, as indicated in the natal chart. Your numbers are 2, 4, 6, 8, and 10.
Thanks!
Do you really believe this?
You must conform to my prophecies. Don't you feel it happening? Huh? Don't you feel it? Here, take some acid. It might help.
What? Huh?
Just take it. If you start now, you'll ascend to the truth in about 12 hours.
This lady is gone.
Just don't pay attention to her. She feeds off of it.
Wow. I can see the eyes of love. They're staring at me. My soul is being lifted into the final act. Here comes the sun. Here comes the sun.
Da 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 da. This lady is fucking nuts.
Oh. That was my mom.
And if my calculations seem correct, this is exactly where Hawking made his revolutionary discovery.
Man, this is almost as exciting as on Christmas when I got an Isaac Asimov book, Mummy 2, and a textbook on mathematical physics.
Man, what the hell? I hope we can ignore these guys. They definitely don't fit our chosen style of personality.
What do we have here?
I would hypothesize that we are dealing with some very amateur astronomers.
If they're doing astronomy, where are their computers?
Did I say very amateur? Perhaps I should have said very, very amateur.
What are those computers for?
Please hold. I will respond to you in approximately 37.8 seconds.
The reason is this. That the greatest physicist and scientist of our time will soon dwindle your appearance, Sir Stephen Hawking. And, by the way, it is elementary what these CPUs are for.
What?
Starry Night version 4.0 Pro Edition.
I don't know. Is it some kind of astronomy software?
What? I'm a little more than a little surprised that you haven't heard of it. It's been out for about 2 years.
Oh.
Silence, okay? Prepare to have your appearance dwindled.
Hello, boys.
Awesome!
Mr. Hawkins, I'm just waiting for Steve to get back, but as long as you're here, we were talking about the history of astronomy and the requirement of knowledge for sustainability of humanity on the planet. Do you know anything about that?
I would like to discuss whether time itself has a beginning and whether it will have an end. All the evidence seems to indicate that the universe has not existed forever, but that it had a beginning about 15 billion years ago. We are not yet certain whether the universe will have an end.
That makes me want to cry. Man, this is too crazy. What's going on?
Oh no, another one comes this way.
Hello, boys. You better watch out on this mountain. You may find it troublesome.
What do you mean?
Aliens.
Okay.
This specific encounter which I am describing is not my first, but I would like not to remember my previous abductions, but describe one specific encounter that occurred when I was 17.
I was just thinking about this.
I was on my way home from military training. About that time, I noticed a glowing object. The time was approximately 8:30 p.m. As this wasn't my first encounter, I assumed it was a UFO. As I was staring at it from my car, I suddenly got out to view it. I was viewing the object for quite some time until it dropped down and landed somewhere in the woods. I was about to walk down the road when I saw 4 to 5 figures emerge out of the woods. I was shocked and frightened. I did nothing but stare at the figure as they came closer until they came in my car and took me in their ship. Inside, it was pitch black, and there was a screen on one wall and a chair right in front of it. They placed me in the chair and put some sort of drill in my nose, then check my eyes with some sort of a metallic device that had a blue light. I became aware of what seemed to be a slender probe that had pushed up inside me and was gently vibrating my prostate. I wondered what in the world was going on. And then I felt small, childlike hands.
Man, you are disgusting.
Well, nobody believes us because there's no proof. But look how crazy I am. That's proof enough.
Who did this to you?
The government.
Okay, what do you want us to do?
I got some drugs from the aliens.
You got drugs from the aliens?
That's where I get my drugs. Do you know this guy named Javier?
It's all on the internet. The truth exists somewhere on the internet.
This is insane. I guess Steve left to go to one of those meetings. Well, whatever. More drugs for us. Oh, man. This is making me drowsy.
Yeah.
Floating on a cloud. Over Candy Island.
Oh no, we fell asleep.
Those drugs were nothing, man.
Man, it's getting hot.
Where are we?
I don't know. Wait, the sun's coming up. Southern California. Man, what is that? That is so annoying. Oh, whoa, what the? Bomb? Gun? I think I hear faces. What's going on? This is way hot. What's going on? There's sand everywhere. I think that guy's speaking Hebrew.
What? I don't know, dude.
I'm in an uncomfortable position.
It reminds me of this movie, Stargate. My God.
Maybe those drugs put us there. Wait, what does that sign say? It says Abu Ghraib! We've been drafted!
The end.
The end.
The end.
Okay, so we're going to come down there for questions. If anybody has questions, we're going to come down there right now.